unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect Dharma. Is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million Kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
This is our last full retreat day. How are you all doing? Okay. Still, I have a bit of a headache, so that added to the challenge of this particular retreat for me, anyway. Each day of whatever sort seems to have plenty of opportunities to remind us that bodies and minds can be inconvenient. Culturally, you know, the suggestion usually is that bodies and minds are something that we have, right? So you often hear someone say, for instance, someone my age may say, "Well, I had my 60th birthday, but inside I'm still 20. It's like, oh, okay. So there's someone who's 60, and then there's this other person who's 20 somewhere. That's kind of cool. But of course, those are not two, as we say. This body mind, whether well or ill, completely expresses being. And as Dogen reminds us, whether viewed from the perspective of birth or death, being, or as he says, being time, is expressed completely. And the only thing that makes it difficult to appreciate that, as Reverend Fatsang reminded us yesterday, is attachment. That twists our view. Otherwise, or really, in any case, as we chanted this morning, it's like facing a perfect mirror. A form and image actually behold each other without distortion. And I realize that's kind of hard to accept. Most of us have a practice of acceptance, which we sometimes call zazen, or retreat, or something, which really just is the practice of acceptance. So I've also been recommending the practice of not worrying, which is essentially the same thing. Ancestor Totsu I Ching asked soon to be ancestor Furong Daokai, "Have you reached the realm of no doubt?" And at that point, actually, Furong Daokai became ancestor Furong Daokai and recognized it as a trick question. So as you know, in the story, he simply covers his ears. Because he knew that no doubt is not a realm. So therefore, no doubt is not something that is reached. I said, no doubt is not something that is reached. And that is exactly why a broken mirror no longer reflects objects, as we heard yesterday. Or falling blossoms rarely climb back up the tree. Have you been contemplating that story? I've got it in front of me here, but would somebody like to recite it? It's very short. Somebody remember it? You can omit the names if you want. Yes.
I think that a monk asked Master Li.
Actually, no, but just say Master so-and-so.
Master so-and-so. Ask the master, what do we do when the master becomes deluded?
Well, kind of. It's sort of like, what happens when a greatly enlightened one becomes deluded?
Oh. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't asking, what do we do? He was just asking,
what happens?
What happens? Mm-hmm. I see.
And then Master says...
The Master says that a broken mirror does not reflect the truth?
Objects. No longer affects objects.
And cut flowers do not rarely climb the tree.
Right. Blossoms rarely.
Blossoms.
Rarely climb the tree. Interesting, he doesn't say never. So maybe sometimes they do. We also heard Master Linji insist that, at least in his day, apparently, in the great Tang, China, it would be difficult to find someone who was not enlightened. And yet, what happens when the great enlightened one becomes deluded? There are, of course, you know, stories about people who were great enlightened ones, maybe, who did some odd things. And then there are kind of functional definitions which say that, well, then if they did odd things, they weren't greatly enlightened ones. I would suggest that Master Dogen might say that those sorts of answers do not represent exhaustive study. And that the great enlightened one properly fills all time and space. And sometimes has a face that we recognize. And sometimes does not. Perhaps more important, however, is how the Great Enlightened One recognizes us, or you. Dogen says here that a broken mirror no longer reflecting objects or images doesn't mean Jing Zhao is saying the greatly enlightened one is now deluded. when the mirror is broken, great enlightened ones and sentient beings alike vanish. And still, there is a world to be cared for. Even if one day blossoms climb back up the tree, there's a world to be cared for. This is exactly, without mistake, the realm of no doubt. Where you all live. This is also known as great peace. And I definitely realized that this is sometimes difficult to appreciate in the midst of this inconvenient, uncomfortable body-mind. There were moments last night when I would put the gnarliness of my migraine at about 8.5 on a scale of 10. So that's up there. So, you know, I wasn't exactly whistling Dixie during that particular night audit. I also wasn't doubting anything. Not because, you know, I think my practice is so great, just because I guess I don't think no doubt is a realm. Oh, before I forget, it will enhance our experience of retreat if we talk less. So let's watch the chatter a little bit there. Okay, the water cooler kind of exchange that we may get into upstairs. Even though that too is the realm of no doubt. Jing Zhao said, "A broken mirror no longer reflects images. Fallen flowers hardly ever climb up the tree." This teaching speaks of the moment when the mirror is broken. It is wrong to study the moment of broken mirror and compare it to the time when the mirror is not broken. It is a mistake to interpret Jing Zhao's words to mean that a greatly enlightened person is no longer deluded. Because the person neither reflects images nor climbs up the tree. This is not a study of the way as it is. If what ordinary people think were right, you should ask, what is the everyday activity of a greatly enlightened person? They might say, can such a person still become deluded? That is not how we should understand the dialogue between Jing Chao and the monk. When the monk said, what happens when a greatly enlightened person becomes deluded? He was asking about the very moment a greatly enlightened person becomes deluded. The very moment when these words are uttered, a broken mirror no longer reflects images, and fallen flowers hardly ever climb up the tree. When fallen flowers are just fallen flowers, even if they get to the top of a 100-foot pole, they are still fallen flowers. When a broken mirror is just a broken mirror, whatever activities occur, they are merely broken pieces that no longer reflect images. Take up the teaching of the words a broken mirror and fallen flowers and study the moment when a greatly enlightened person becomes deluded. So I suspect you know you've heard this teaching before many times. And as we say, this season, in many times, in many ways. Merry Christmas. Broken mirror pieces are exactly that. At just this moment, fallen flowers are precisely and without error, fallen flowers. And completely express birth and death. And the more we practice in that full place of acceptance, the more the no realmness of no doubt becomes obvious. And the more the meaning of the true body-mind of faith becomes our own, or is revealed to be our own. Not that it matters, but, you know, I don't think in Dogen's time they had mirrors of glass. They had mirrors of polished metal. So I think when we read this story today, we think of glass with a backing of reflective material. And when we drop one of those, we have 7 years of bad luck. But if you have a disc of very highly polished copper, say, or gold even, if you break one of those, you really got to do a number on it. Sometimes we take blossoms that have fallen and put them in a bowl of water and offer them to Buddha. That is, to the greatly enlightened one. And then go about our business of taking care of this inconvenient world. With all its suffering beings. Which reminds me, is today Saturday? Yes? So tonight I think we'll have a full moon ceremony at the end of the day, where we bring to the fore of consciousness the vow to save all those suffering beings. That vow, which, as they say, is the sole reason for Buddha's appearing in the world. The sole reason for greatly enlightened ones entering delusion to help us. So I hope I'll be around for that. I have done full moon ceremonies with a migraine before. It is not a realm I hope to revisit, but I may have to. So we'll have to see. There's more to this essay. But also, you could ask a question or make a comment if you wish. Yes.
So, you were just suggesting that a great enlightened one or a Buddha entering into samsara or being of the Nirmanakaya is a great enlightened one entering in delusion.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you said?
To save us. They say that's the only reason.
I wonder though, we've been given this task of recognizing what it would be like to be a great enlightened one entering into delusion. But how could we have that perspective if we're not great enlightened ones?
Did you say we've been given the task of... Did you say again?
Well, it sounded like Dogen was suggesting that maybe we should inspect what it's like to be a great enlightened one, entering into delusion.
I think he said we should study the moment of the great enlightened one becoming deluded, which is a little different.
Well, if we're suggesting that the great enlightened one is entering into samsara to save living beings,
that's a little different.
How do we do that? If we're not enlightened ones, we don't have that perspective. It's sort of like trying to enter Zazen without sitting.
I think we're doing that right now. I think that's our work.
But to suggest that we're great enlightened ones is
not... I wouldn't suggest that.
Okay, then how can we be doing that? There is a vast difference, although there is a short distance between ordinary and enlightenment.
Oh,
it's
very
also,
short.
It's also...
Yes.
The difference is vast as vast as the distance between heaven and earth.
At noon, as we say, if there is the slightest discrepancy. So Zazen is the practice of no discrepancy. However, it's not something that we do exactly. That's our practice, and yet we don't do it. So we don't assume either that we are greatly enlightened ones or that we're not. So this is where Buddha's vow kind of drowns us, luckily.
What I'm suggesting is that even though enlightenment and ordinary is very close to each other,
mm-hmm.
the difference of them is so far apart that an ordinary person can't really, will never see the perspective of a true enlightenment until one actually realizes
that
the difference.
Maybe, but I shan't concern myself with that.
I understand the Zen perspective of that.
Good.
But it is our intention. We have the intention anyway.
We have the vow. And tonight we shall bring that to the fore in the midst of the full moonlight. And maybe you can be here? Or
depends
too late?
Depends on the time.
Oh, it's at the end of the day.
I'll be back in the morning at 9.
Okay, well, we will think of you.
And I'll think of you.
There are nonetheless many details of practice. Yes.
So I'm just saying that when the great enlightenment becomes delusional.
I didn't say that.
Not okay.
Okay.
When the great enlightenment.
Great enlightened one, or great enlightenment.
Great enlightenment.
Oh, you're talking about great enlightenment.
Right.
Okay.
Becomes delusional.
Well, that's something different from what I'm saying.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you have to elaborate on what you're saying if you want to.
Okay, when the blossom, fallen blossom becomes,
yes.
When the fallen blossom itself is an expression of birth and death.
That, good, okay, I'm with you there.
That's it.
There's
no, it's not the fallen enlightenment.
It's not.
I've been confused between fallen enlightenment.
Between,
fall,
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite hear.
Enlightenment and fallen enlightenment.
We're talking about the blossoms rarely climbing back up the tree.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about blossoms, a fallen blossom completely expressing birth and death.
Right.
Are you down with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, is there a question in there?
No, I just want to make sure that's what I understood.
Okay. Did you?
No, I understand it.
Okay.
I was in doubt.
Oh, I see. And now you're in no doubt.
Small.
Did you want to?
I just remembered yesterday, I thought you said, I might have gotten it wrong, but it seems to be Dogen put a little beacon in there, a little warning light that said, not the answer, but the monk's question itself was an entire Dharma talk to the whole assembly.
He did say that.
He did say that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He did say that, yes.
Which to me suggests that it's not just a simple matter of asking, there's a being at time X who's greatly enlightened, and at time Y is not enlightened, and what happens at, you know, time Z in between where he goes to being enlightened?
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a Dharma talk to the whole assembly, would it?
That's true, and this goes on for a couple of pages. So, for instance, do not regard great enlightenment as becoming a Buddha, returning to the source, and manifesting a Buddha body. Do not regard becoming deluded as returning to be a sentient being. People with mistaken views talk about breaking great enlightenment and returning to be a sentient being, but Jing Zhao was implying neither that great enlightenment gets broken or lost, nor that the delusion appears. Do not think that those do not think like those who have mistaken views. Does that speak to your concern?
Yeah, I think it reminds me of something that one of the local teachers used to say. It was you.
How local?
Very local. I don't even think he was quoting anybody. He said, no matter how enlightened you become, you are never going to go beyond this body and mind right now.
Ah. Hmm.
And I didn't have the impression he was just speaking to sentient beings.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to watch those local creatures. Yeah. Be very careful of them.
I'd like to throw one more thing out there.
Yeah, throw it out there.
We're talking about birth and death.
Yes.
We're talking about understanding birth and death. But what about the ending, the cycle of birth and death, rather than, and having control over birth and death, rather than just understanding it? Just understanding it doesn't indicate that we're anything but ordinary, but having control over birth and death is different.
Well, personally, I don't aspire to that, but if that happens, that would be impressive.
It does happen.
Ooh, okay.
I can introduce you to people.
I have met persons with that supposed attribute. So be it.
Well, if we don't want to return to any one of the six realms, wouldn't it be required?
Well, in Zen, we say to travel throughout the six realms in a samadhi of innocent delight is fine for a bodhisattva. So I'm down with that.
What about becoming a Buddha?
We say fallen blossoms seldom climb back up the tree, but maybe sometimes. So I'm down with that too. Isn't Zen fun? I said that to a fellow student once, and he said, well, not so much.
Well, I just think that we've all taken the vow to become a Buddha, and a bodhisattva is not a Buddha yet. There are 12 levels of bodhisattvas.
There are those stages, and I'm down with that too. So, I'm also down with taking a little more medicine, so if you'll excuse me, I think I'm going to fall off my tree for a moment. Excuse me. Thank you very much.
May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I bow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable.